and it makes a fiery ring.
All right, welcome back here to ESPN.
Would you join us? Bojo's been around a while, and the one reason we wanted to bring him on today, probably have a little closer insight of what's going on down on the plains. And certainly, Bojo, if you're there, you'll understand why we're concerned. Probably one of the worst performances I've seen basically with a favored team going into a Tennessee game that I ever recall. Bojo, would join us. Bojo, how you doing today?
Well, I'm good, Max, but I thought you were going to have me on to win a prize or something. I didn't know
you
were going to have me.
What do you like?
Hey,
we got all kind of stuff. We ship you Diet Pepsi because you probably need a little of that.
Yeah.
From there.
Have you got a rushing offense? Have you got a ground game over there you can spare?
Well, I watched a little bit of that. Here's what I'm concerned about, though, that when you have a ground game, you got to get it to the field. And I think that some of that's been held up in the coaching staff room and maybe left on the practice field from Monday to Friday.
Max, what you've got is a situation where, and again, this is not opinion. This is fact. They're 78th in the country in rushing the football right now, 163 yards per game. Last year they were 21st with 261 yards per game. You know as well as I do, that's a huge difference from one year. And I totally agree with you. I think that, and I don't know if it's Chip, I don't know if it's Gus, but it's almost like they won't let the kids play. It's like they want to play a video game. Let's wait to the last second to get a play in. They had to call a timeout coming off of a kickoff on Saturday.
I saw that. Bojo, I think you just hit on it. I don't know that not only – I think there's a confusion about the coaching staff who's making the decisions, even in play calling, and certainly it transposes over to the kids. First of all, you go back and look until the Winslow kid started to make some ground. We knew going in that as good as the Martin kid was, he's 185 pounds. And, he ought to be as a wideout somewhere. Or you can't run between the tackles on Gus's offense at 185 pounds. Somebody's going to knock you down and you aren't going to get up. Winslow, had started up. He'd gotten – he's bigger, he's stronger. Mm-hmm. But the fumble going into the end zone last week, and then he gets beat up, his shoulder again gets hurt. Mm-hmm. Just little things like that. Here's a question I always ask, and you know this as well as anybody. You've been at that level. Where's the depth? Where are the guys at? Why don't you have two or three running backs at 230 pounds if you're going to run that style of offense?
Max, you hit the nail on the head right there. For nine straight seasons, Auburn has had a 1,000-yard rusher. Nine straight seasons. How can you not recruit running backs to that situation? And, again, they don't have depth there. They don't have depth at quarterback. They're starting, and nothing against the kid, but they're starting a graduate transfer from UMass on the offensive line right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's happened internally, but something certainly is not. I did the good, the bad, and the ugly, and certainly the ugly was the Auburn game this past weekend, and that was one of the reasons I wanted you to really come on. You've been there. You understand the communication or lack of on a coaching staff at that level. It's one of those things that why didn't they make substitutions? Why hadn't they given, is it Malik, the number two quarterback? Why hadn't they given him a shot? He couldn't do any worse. I mean, look, Steedham had two picks and laid one on the ground, cost him two touchdowns out of those three turnovers. Mm-hmm. So, where is the improvement coming? I don't see it coming, Bojo, right now, unless the kids have a team-only meeting this week and they get themselves together and says, hey, we're going to win in spite of what we're doing. That's the only way I think they got a chance to pull this thing out.
Max, you hear talk of a divided locker room right now.
Right.
Out in the masses and everything. But let me tell you what I'm hearing is I'm not hearing that there's a divided locker room. I'm hearing that there's a locker room that's looking for leadership.
Yeah, I believe that. I do believe that.
But, Max.
Where do they find it, though, Bojo?
Well,
and I heard Coach Chizik on TV the other night on SEC Now, and I heard Pat Dow on with Feinbaum last Friday. They singing the same song is that they, of course, the coaches are saying there's no leadership, quote, emerging from the team. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the case, the coaches can't play. You know, it's well and good to have it on the sideline, but when the ball snapped, you got to have somebody step up and take responsibility for what's going on. And I hadn't seen anybody do that yet.
I haven't either, Max, and you very well know that there's some guys that are just natural leaders. They come in and they pick up that mantle and go. But as a coach, if you have a team that you see doesn't have leadership, and you better see it down the road, you better see it for the next year and the next year, and you better start developing a leader. You better start getting two or three guys under your wings and saying, hey, guys, this is what we need to do. This is what we need you to do. And let the one who comes at it the most natural take over that mantle of being the leader. But right now, they haven't developed that at Auburn. But let me say this. Since Gus has been there, and I'm going back to his time as even an offensive coordinator, the only time that they've really had success is when they've had a ready-made quarterback come in and take over. Every quarterback that's been there any period of time, I mean, Jarrett Stidham's 10 times a better quarterback last year than he was this year after being coached for a year. I mean, you know, what does that tell you?
Somebody's getting coached down.
Right.
That's what it sounds
right.
like to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I lived through the Jeremy Johnson era. I knew what happened when they recruited him and brought him in. He was Mr. Alabama basketball, Mr. Alabama football. He was not a fit for what Auburn wanted to do, by all means. So, you know, you discard that. The best one they've had, obviously, was Cam Newton. You know, they go pick up a defensive back at a junior college the next year and have some success with that. But that system is a little unique in the respect is it takes certain players. The running game has to be efficient for them. They line up in the spread to run, not to throw right off the bat. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think all that, but I think you hit it on the head without saying it. That coaching staff, it appears now, is something less than to be desired because they are not transposing what they know over over to the players.
Max, it takes a special type coach to be able to handle success. A lot of coaches can get to the pinnacle and kind of and peer over into the promised land, so to speak. But it takes a special type guy to be able to handle success. And all coaches, Coach Bryant went through rough times, and he bounced back. Coach Dye went through rough times. I was kind of at the tail end of that when I got there to Auburn. They were just coming out of that complacency type here where, oh, we've arrived. And the thing about those coaches, though, is that they only learned that lesson one time. Tom Osborne at Nebraska is another good example. They had a, you know, if you want to call back then, going 8-3 a down year. But, you know, they had some tough times, but they bounced back and they never had to relearn that lesson. At Auburn, it just seems like whoever the coach is, and it kind of goes back to Tuberville even, you know, you ride that wave of success, and then there's that lull. And that's the one thing that's different between every other coach out there and Nick Saban right now. I don't care if Alabama goes out and beats somebody 100-0 and they don't give up 1 yard of total offense. He's going to – somebody didn't have their socks pulled up high enough or something. And
I'll take another step. It all starts with recruiting.
Yep.
And I think the examples you use, Osborne, Coach Dye, Coach Bryant, they never stopped recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
They never stopped recruiting on players that they knew could win that based on their track record. I question now, I'm beginning to question where, you know, what is the background of some of these kids that, you know, that once they get to that level, certainly maybe the awareness of success or maybe the assumption of success plays a role in that. But you and I both know, we haven't been around too long. Look, when they tee that thing up on Saturday, all bets are off. It's all equal. Now, you can make your team go and do what you're supposed to do and play hard, and those kind of teams usually end up winning. I don't see that out of Auburn right now.
I don't either. I don't see a team that has any sense of purpose right now. I think that the defense, again, you know, they started out the year playing, you know, they played lights out. I think it's reached the point where they feel like, especially in that Mississippi State game, you could just see the energy drain out of that defense as the game wore on. And Mississippi State, they had about 20 more snaps than Auburn did in that game.
Right.
And, again, it gets to a point, and you know, me being an old defensive coordinator, I really understand this. the longer you're out there, you get a turnover, you give it to the offense in good field position, they don't drive it, you give it to them in the red zone, they don't score, they miss a field goal, that is just demoralizing to a defense. And, you know, just a natural progress, you know, your energy level goes down, your production goes down. Now I'm tired. Shoot, let's just get out of here.
I'm going to recognize this and pass this on to you. I reran the tape on the Auburn-Mississippi State ballgame, and here's where my, confusion really started. On their defensive front, the front four, we know, highly touted everywhere, but to Mississippi State's credit, they had not shown the quarterback draw but a couple of times in a ball game. Mm-hmm. Most of it was a drop-back pass. It was Moorhead's bringing that Penn State stuff here where they wanted to throw it down the field. They was trying to make Fitzgerald a down-the-field passer, and that didn't work too well. Mm-hmm. And here's what I watched in rewind. Every time on a quarterback draw, when the quarterback took the step back, you know where the linebackers went? They went straight to the hook zone.
Right.
So that told me that they had not prepared for the draw. But that's okay. I understand that. A lot of us get caught in that. But Boji, you've been there, done that. Don't you make adjustments during the ball game?
I
never saw them make adjustments out of that.
Max, that you're spot on there. You watch Auburn's defense, and you watch teams find an area that they can attack, and they right. just keep going back to it and going back to it because Auburn doesn't make any adjustments, you know, whatsoever. And now this is the sad part for me is that now, as an old defensive coordinator, in my game plan, I like to keep a bag of about 5, 6, 7 stunts and blitzes, you know, over yep. to the side, and I'm not going to run those until the second half. And the reason I'm not going to run those to the second half is because I don't want to give that offense time to go in there and sit down for 20 minutes, have a Coke, and not be, you know, be uninterrupted and make these adjustments to those yep. certain stunts and blitzes. And, you know, I want them to have to do that in the second half where, you know, they're sitting over there right between series and they've got 3 or 4 minutes maybe, and then the next thing you know, they got to get up and go play. They come back, they got to start all over again. But the thing with this Auburn defense that surprises me is they're not even making the adjustments at halftime. That I don't understand that.
Yeah, those are the things. I'm not saying I'm just awed. I'm shocked by it, mm-hmm. to tell you the truth. And I think the fans now, that attitude, Boji, in all fairness, has spilled over to that. They hear so much talk like this on the air, and I think are now being made aware of things like that. And if they don't get a win this weekend, and I don't know, if they play like they did Saturday, they won't get a win this weekend. I think the best bet is that they're hoping that Ole Miss, having beat Arkansas the first time in 5 years, will kind of spill over to their complacency, and they'll get a chance to come in here and win. But not on the performance that I saw this past week, where they come to Oxford and win on Saturday.
Max, I'm going to tell you, I talked with Mike Bernard earlier this morning on my show, and, of course, Mike is OTM Sports out in Las Vegas. And Mike told me, even though Auburn is opened as a favorite on the road versus Ole Miss, he said there are folks out there in Vegas scratching their heads right now because they fully expect Ole Miss to beat Auburn on Saturday. And I do too. I don't see a team that has any togetherness right now. They don't play with any energy. A caller on my show this morning said something about, you know, well, you know, what do you think we're going to do? You think, you know, 7-5, you know, maybe get to the Birmingham Bowl? I said, let me tell you something. I said, you may get to the Birmingham Bowl by going 5-7 if you can beat Liberty. That may be
right.
That. And again, you know me. I mean, I was a GA down there. I've got an affinity for Auburn. But, Max, I've talked to a lot of my buddies, former players down there this past week, and you know they bleed the orange and blue. And some of these guys, you and I personally know. You know who I'm talking about. These yep. guys bleed the orange and blue, and it is killing them to see what is happening down there. But, hey, hats off to Gus Malzahn and Jimmy Sexton, because he's got the best freaking contract in the history of college football. I mean,
and you know what's ironic about that? It was the president that negotiated that with Jimmy. So, you know, mm-hmm. Gus was there And we know the floating of the Arkansas, I'm not real sure that was even viable, if you don't know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, he got the contract. So he's set for life regardless, win, lose, or draw.
He is. And the thing about it is, Gus Malzahn has gotten two contract extensions since he's been at Auburn. And again, as you said, all it was the illusion that someone wanted him. They want me. There was nothing definitive on the table from anyone.
Very true.
And it blows my mind away. I know they've got tons of money down there. I know that. But $32 million. I mean,
I narrowed it down to this. They got one guy can write that check. He's chairman of the board.
Yep.
We all know who that is.
Yes.
But the fact is this, is that if not, they're going to have a bunch of – I said this during the game. If Auburn loses to Tennessee, I'm going to see a bunch of alums stand there on Toomer's Corner with a bucket trying to pick up a donation to see if they can't get that $16 million up front and get him gone. But I don't know that. I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Yep.
And I know those are the drastic terms, and, we kind of poke fun at it from time to time just to get a laugh, because it's really tragic to me, of what's going on that football field.
It really is. And again, I have such an affinity, such great memories from my time there, and still have probably more friendships from there than any place that I ever coached. And all I was a GA there at that time. I wasn't a full-time assistant or anything. But, Max, I'm going to go back, and we're going to look at a little history here real quick. Go back to Gene Chizik. And the telling point for Gene Chizik was the Texas A&M game, when Johnny Manziel came in to Auburn, and it looked like a spring game crowd, and a bad spring game crowd at that much. If Auburn loses to Ole Miss this week, and then they have the open week, and then they host Texas A&M, if that stadium's only got about 45,000-50,000 in it, somebody's going to be breaking out a checkbook.
Yeah, and I tend to believe that. I mean – Auburn football's been too big a deal at Auburn for too many years, and certainly, however, I will say this: Bruce Pearl's got that basketball team looking pretty good. I don't mean to inject that, but I think that's a fact. And there'll be some people want to hang their hat on that. But without the football and the eagle flying, Auburn's in pretty bad shape. We've got a couple of minutes left. Oh, just quickly, go across the state to Alabama. That Tua spent 19 minutes, by the way, in a 10 on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody knew he was kind of beamed up a little bit with a knee.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Saban just said in his press conference at noon today that he will start against Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would risk that or not. Look, they got a number two there, 26-2 in a national championship. Why would you not want to just start him and let Tua rest for the next 2 weeks to get ready to go to LSU?
Frankly, they didn't need Tua on Saturday against Missouri. I wouldn't have played him even then because you look at it, he got hurt on a slide. He didn't get hit. That cleat got caught up in a slide, and it's just not worth it. And I totally agree with you. I believe, despite what happened Saturday down in Auburn, I still believe that Alabama can beat Tennessee with Jalen Hurts. Number one, I obviously they've just got tons more talent than Tennessee. Number two, I think Tennessee's tank's going to be empty because they put so much emotion into that game.
Yeah, I don't think he's in. Of course, they lost the starting middle linebacker with a targeted hit, and he's out for the first half of that ball game. So I think Alabama will continue to roll, I think, and I don't see anybody beating them. We get to the playoffs and again, last question, though, surprised with LSU and Georgia?
I was surprised a little bit, not as much as everyone else. And I'll tell you, I thought Georgia has played sloppily all season long. They just haven't played anyone with an equivalent amount of talent. And I think if they don't clean things up, I think Georgia will be out of this race week after next, because Florida keeps getting better. Georgia keeps getting worse.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That's why I threw the question out, just to ask. I think Dan Mullen, whatever they got at Florida, has to go to improvement with Dan Mullen. And I think we're going to see an outstanding ball game. Hey, Boji, thank you so much for your time today. We'll do this again very soon.
Max, look forward to having you on my show sometime soon also.
I will do it. Thank you so much. Boji Wood joins us, former assistant coach. Had a career at all levels. We want to thank him for his time this morning. We're going to take a short break, come right back. Going to talk a little Ole Miss football, right, with Jack Ivey from up at Red Bay, Alabama.
They've been protecting you from me. Someone called us outlaws in some old magazine. New York City posse down.